So the third area is perspective. So if we look at mindfulness-based cognitive therapy for depression, which is perhaps the thing I'm most familiar with, was set up originally to find a way of using CBT to help prevent relapse, but that could be delivered in a group format. And what you get in cognitive therapy, CBT, is you get people to challenge their negative thoughts. So, for example, there might be a scenario where it happens. Somebody's walking down the road and they recognise someone over across to the side of the road and they wave at them and the person doesn't respond. And someone who's prone to depression might immediately fall into, oh, what have I done? They obviously hate me, as an interpretation of that. So what you do in CBT is you notice, you write all that down, I believe that they hate me, and then you look for alternatives like maybe they didn't see me, maybe they were in a bad mood, and, well, if that's the way they treat me, do I want them to be my friend anyway, if they do hate me? So there might be all these alternative ways of thinking about it. What happens in CBT, if it's successful, is you keep doing these diaries and you keep challenging these beliefs. And what eventually happens is you get a change on an implicit level where basically you don't take the thought so seriously. So you might still have this thought, oh, she hates me because she didn't wave at me. But you think, oh, well, you just don't take it. You see it much more as provisional. So what is implicit in CBT is made explicit, particularly in mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, in MBCT. So the people who developed MBCT, as I say, they were cognitive therapists. They set out to develop this way of, you know, a group version of CBT. They got interested in Kabat-Zinn's work and thought, oh, mindfulness, that could be quite useful. Let's try and put a bit of mindfulness into our CBT. But actually what they ended up with was really a mindfulness training with a bit of CBT thrown in the end. And what's key part of this is making this very explicit, what is implicit in CBT. So thoughts are just seen as thoughts rather than necessarily as facts. It's so easy to believe what goes on in our mind. It's so easy to get caught up in it. You know, we have a thought, I'm rubbish, and we think, oh, or she did that because I'm a terrible person, and again, oh. It has that thinking and feeling. It's amazing how sticky our thoughts are, how we just hold on to them and get caught up in them. Again, for those of you who've meditated, which I imagine many of you have done, it's so easy, isn't it, to just get caught up on a train of thoughts. Before you know it, you're, woof, gone off somewhere. So what we train to do in MBCT is really to see thoughts just as passing phenomena. We just recognise in a way that we've all got lots of garbage in our head. We just, you know, put the cards on the table, let's face it. It's true for me. I sometimes think, I can't believe I'm thinking that again. Anyway. But we just recognise, that's what the mind really just sort of throws up, this sometimes rather tedious, repetitive, and very, very occasionally interesting stuff, yet we so easily get caught up in. So what we do is we just see it, as I said, as passing phenomena. So we just see thoughts, they just arise, they pass away, we don't need to take them seriously. And again, that's a real key learning, if we cannot take our thinking so seriously. So each time we return to the breath, each time we return to the body, it's like we step out of taking our thoughts so seriously. So again, it's a bit like this idea of climbing the tower, as mentioned. And in the refrain, this idea of things arising, passing away, and both. In other words, seeing that things are impermanent. We can increasingly recognise that things will pass. So negative thoughts, though they arise, though sometimes they can feel absolutely torrential, they will pass. Similarly, urges to engage in unhelpful behaviour may be very, very strong, they will pass. And the more we can see that, then the more confidence we can have in that. And again, in the refrain, it talks about internally and externally. So we can just reflect on how it happens to other people as well. It doesn't just happen to me, that actually, in a way, these sort of thoughts, this stuff, it's just an impersonal process, in a way. Depending on conditions, our particular thoughts will to do with our own personal conditions, which may be our childhood, it may be recent events, it may just simply be that we just creep thinking, you know, in that way. Again, you know, if you sort of look at addiction, for example, quite often there may be particular early events that have led someone towards, say, using drink, but then once it gets established, then actually you suddenly find you need a drink because you're depressed, because you're anxious, because you've had a row, because you're watching the television, because you're celebrating the World Cup, and it's sort of like, you know, you always need a drink. It's sort of every situation, it just gets associated with more and more things. So that's perspective. So now, particularly changing our perspective on our thoughts and the other phenomena that happen in our minds. And then the final one is choice. And really that follows on from the other things, that actually once we've clocked what's going on, once we've learned to be with difficult experience rather than to flee from it psychically or to get rid of it by reaching for a substance, we're then in a much better position to decide what is the best thing to do. And this, in a way, is mindfulness of purpose. And in a way, meditation, again, can be very useful from that point of view, because it can sometimes create a space of what sometimes people talk of as wise mind to arise. So if we can just sit with something, then sometimes a solution, a helpful solution, will just manifest, will just arise.